This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you visit Arizona, time is measured in moments, not minutes. Like the moment you see the Grand Canyon for the first time. Visit a new state of mind. Learn more at hereyouareaz.com.
M.I.P.
With Masamela Matfumo.
Mark Thompson.
Make it kind.
Get woke.
God bless you, get woke. Folks, MIP is now COVID-free, meaning free to all subscribers as we navigate this pandemic. We're thinking about everyone, and we've got to get through this together. So for a limited time, no fee to subscribe to Make It Plain on your favorite podcast app. God bless you, ladies and gentlemen. Let me just start by saying that, as you all know, if you were listening to or you downloaded Tuesday's podcast this week and Make It Plain, you heard what we actually did not know would be the final interview with Dr. Conrad Wuerl, a renowned scholar, a teacher, a university professor, organizer, Pan-Africanist, Black nationalist. He succumbed to both cancer and COVID. And he wanted to have a sit down with me and Roland Martin. If you've not gone back on Tuesday to download that, please do. Conrad was the chairman emeritus of the National Black United Front, as well as one of the organizers of NCOBRA, the Movement for Reparations, the Million Man March, the Million for Reparations March. And even though as a Pan-Africanist, he wasn't crazy about electoral politics, he participated in it. And he was one of the organizers of Harold Washington's successful campaign in Chicago for mayor. That was not an overnight process. That was a 30-year organizing effort. You know, a lot of times we think things happen overnight. They don't. We've got to start early. And he spoke to us on Tuesday about the importance of African-Americans and our allies settling our differences to defeat Donald Trump in November. He admonished young people to not diminish the importance of voting and for all of us to bury the hatchet in terms of our disagreements and agree on one thing to defeat Donald Trump. So if you've not, go back and hear that. We now know that that was his last interview. It was on Wednesday morning, the very next morning after we aired the interview, that he made his transition to the ancestry. He was an enormous impact on so many people in the movement across so many sectors. One of the stories he used to love to tell, he won't have a state or national funeral, even though he deserves one in our movement, but Conrad was actually born in Pasadena before the family moved to Chicago, and his father was the best friend of Mack Robinson and Jackie Robinson. They were all in school together, and he used to love to tell those stories about his family's relationship with the Robinsons. We know about Jackie. Many people don't know that Mack Robinson came in second and won the silver medal next to Jesse Owens in the Berlin Olympics. That was Jackie's older brother. Quite an athletic family. And his father ran track. Conrad ran track. In fact, the plan now is to name the new discussions to name the new $63 million track facility, the only indoor track facility of its kind in Chicago after Dr. Conrad Wuerl. So God bless him and his family. it is, I cannot emphasize enough the influence that he had on my life and those of us who've been involved in our freedom struggle for decades. So we just wanted to open the show and say that and give tribute to him. Please, whatever you do, go back and download that interview. Roland Martin and I did it together, shared with young people who now are frustrated and don't know what to do and don't know whether voting matters anymore. That's real. I'm hearing that. And we'll get more into that. We have today a double dose of Thursday Coast. How about that? That rhymes. Joining us once again from Minneapolis, just blocks away from, she lives just blocks away from where George Floyd was assassinated. Erna Landrum, the director of campaigns for Daily Coast, joins us once again. Erna, welcome back to the show a second time.
Thank you, Mark.
And I don't, let me just say to folks, this ain't easy. All of us talking about this, it takes time and effort to even open up and talk about this. So Erna is probably, we're all going through unspeakable grief and trauma that we can't even describe right now. A lot of it is suppressed and subconscious. We have no treatment for the PTSD from slavery and our racial experience in America. So imagine Erna being right there in the neighborhood and what she may be going through. So it's not lost on me that she's taking her time and sharing with us. Also, my brother joins us. We've been doing this a long time, and I so appreciate him. You know, he said, well, we should just talk to Erna, but I wanted him to come on because he has the bird's eye view as he looks at polls, as civics looks at polls, about what's happening and the impact. And you know, a lot of times, folks, this isn't an interview. This is a dialogue. Today, it'll be a trialogue because there's some things I've been hearing. I like to bounce those off of him and have him either confirm, deny, talk me down or whatever. So we love him for joining us, as always, and taking the time. It's no small thing that the founder of the largest online progressive town, so to speak, takes his time to spend with us every week. He is Marcos Melitzis. Marcos, good to have you back as well. How you doing, man?
Always a pleasure to join you and to talk, and less of a pleasure given the subject matter these days, but this is important stuff, and I'm glad we're finally getting to address it as a nation.
Yeah. So, Erna, give us just a little update just from your corner of the struggle. First of all, we're seeing, obviously, video feeds from all over the world. I've been even invited to be on the BBC and Sky News twice this week, and people are demonstrating everywhere. So what's the latest close to home? Demonstrations still taking place? Are they as sustaining the same size as they always have? Just kind of give us a glimpse, if you would.
The activism energy here in Minneapolis isn't going to die down anytime soon. There have been a number of very, very large protests and demonstrations. We actually also have some folks in our community who are vetting all of the protests and marches that are being put up, because it's become clear that many people are taking advantage of this moment and trying to gather people in ways that are not in alignment with the goals of Black Lives Matter, justice for George Floyd, and holding police accountable for the reign of terror that many communities are experiencing. I want to say maybe yesterday, I lose track of time right now.
Yeah.
I think it was 2 days ago, there was a very large protest, thousands of people, I don't know the exact numbers, up on the 35W Bridge, which many years ago was a source of grief for the Minneapolis community because it collapsed into the river. And on this bridge, there was a demonstration, peaceful demonstration, family and friends, and you may have seen that a truck, like a large gas tanker plowed through that crowd. And I was on my way home from my partner's parents' house and happened to see the choppers that were flying over with water. It was just so much chaos. We ran on our way home. There are a couple car accidents that we drove around on the way home, but people are not deterred. They're still out in the streets. There's still basically a 24/7 vigil at the corner where George Floyd was murdered, where folks are holding that space entirely sacred. The city has gone under, we've gone under citywide curfew, as so has St. Paul. And our county commissioner, Angela Conley, has definitely made sure that that space could be held exempt from curfew so that people could gather there in grief and in love and in community at all times and just really keep it as a spiritual, sacred, grounded community space. And another thing that's happening right now is communities have come together and tried to figure out how we are going to take care of ourselves, because in many instances, it's been very clear that the increased police presence, National Guard has been deployed here. The Army, if it has, I believe Army has been deployed here with the increased military guard and police presence in our communities, that many people feel even more under threat and not protected. And so communities have gotten together. My block, I canvassed the block and knocked every single door on my block. We came up with the flyer to tell people, here's the plan. We're going to sit watch. And the first night we'll do it all together. And that's not sustainable. People haven't been sleeping well because we're under such, because we're so vigilant about every noise that we hear. Just a couple nights ago, while I was sitting on my porch, a car zoomed by and shot a live round into the air. And so, like, folks have been really unable to sleep with that, and choppers, and just hearing fire, like gunfire all night. But there's definitely a huge spirit of, we got us. If nobody got us, we got us. And so we got folks in the community doing alley sweeps, because we have confirmed reports of people hiding accelerants in the alleyways. So we got folks doing alley sweeps, making sure that those are clear, checking in with the neighbor. I'm on a couple of signal threads where we're just checking in with each other all night long. And really, I think in the last couple of nights started to really move towards, how do we make this a sustainable practice, not one that keeps us all up at all hours of the night, but so that our bodies and nervous systems can settle enough to sleep? And also, how do we do this in such a way that doesn't replicate policing? Because right now folks are so scared, there's so much paranoia and vigilance that we started to move in suspicion of everything that was unfamiliar. And like, that's the current model of policing that we don't want to replicate. But so I just think that we're moving really thoughtfully and intentionally, block by block by block. There are some communities over in North Minneapolis. White supremacists came out and trolled the neighborhood. Fires got set and there was barely any police presence. So community members who were armed came out to defend their own community. And right now, you know, just even our government is starting to wonder what their relationship with our police department should be. And so, I mean, to answer your question, there's demonstrations, there's block by block community care, there's mutual aid. We're raising money for all of the businesses that have been impacted by fires and vandalism. And though we're in a scary time, we're also in a hopeful time, because this is the most inroads that we've ever had around abolishing police.
Yeah. Erna, thank you. And thank you for having the courage to truly express yourself and share your emotion. I felt that, and I'm with you. And as I said, you're right there. Let me ask you this. You mentioned to me too that you all, in terms of some of this peculiar and nefarious activity, some have encountered accelerants that have been left around parts of the neighborhood. Can you talk to us about that?
Sure. I've seen in so many places, people have found water bottles filled with gasoline. I mean, that's the one that I remember the most, bottles filled with gasoline, other forms of accelerants that people weren't sure what they were. A gas station, the gas station just across the street from where George Floyd was murdered, it was clear that there had been some tampering there, not sure what people were attempting to do. But, my neighbors went over and secured that to make sure that there was no fuel that could be used against our community. But folks are finding it. There's a word to look in the bushes, look in the alleys, look around the garbage cans. Actually, we are asking people to pull their cans in so that they're not there to be targeted. And so far, this has remained mostly an attack on our commercial and business corridors in the community, but there is real live concern about houses being next, especially because people are finding these accelerants hidden in their on their properties.
And just one other point before, and I go to Marcos, you were also saying that there's a group of you that is vetting some of the protests and activities as they're being announced. Did I understand you correctly?
One person I know in particular is doing that. She's just asking every day. Since yesterday she started the thread. She did a thread today where she was like, if you find a protest, march, or rally, just put it here, drop a link to it, and yep. I will find out who is organizing it, what's the purpose, and if this feels like something we should actually turn our people out to.
Right. Because there's a lot of confusion. Just even on Tuesday, I don't know, you're there on the ground, so I don't even know how much time you've had a chance to absorb social media, but you know, there was this Blackout Tuesday thing, and the music industry started it, and then some folk latched on and got confused. They attributed it to Color of Change. Color of Change said, this ain't us, and the plan was for some in those industries to mute themselves, but people got confused and thought we all as African Americans should mute ourselves and put up the black squares. Then by the afternoon, it became the hashtag became Amplify Melanated Voices, and people who weren't melanated should be muted. I was gratified by the fact, because I've never seen the term melanated used so en masse before, like it was on Twitter on Tuesday. But, you know, it's all of that going on, and it wasn't that harmful, but to some people who were really confused, should we be silent? Should we be heard? So that vetting is important. I'm not saying those who first put out Blackout Tuesday were doing anything nefarious, but when there's a vacuum in this chaos, you know, that kind of stuff just happened. Did you get a chance to even look at any of that stuff? Hopefully not with all you're dealing with, but some of us got, you know, we just got spun around on Tuesday.
I did get a chance to look at some of that, and I found it really ironic that something that was purporting to uplift Black voices and Black perspectives and Black resource sharing actually buried it based on the algorithms, the hashtags, Black Lives Matter, Justice for George Floyd. They started getting buried underneath these just black square pictures. And so folks had to dig and dig and dig to find out what was happening in communities. Regardless of the intent, I think, you know, like when we talk about equity, we often talk about intent and impact. Regardless of the intent, the impact was to bury the very voices that need to be heard right now.
Yeah. Marcos, you introduced me to Erna, and folks, this speaks to Marcos as well. You know, last week he said, you need to have Erna on the show. This week he said, you need to have Erna on the show. I forced him to come on, though, because, you know, I know Erna is not only exhausted, but I did want to get that 30,000 feet in the air overview. But before I ask you a question, Marcos, I don't know whether there was anything you wanted to ask of Erna in terms of what's happening there on the ground or what she's dealing with.
I just want to express my incredible gratitude and love and affection for the work that she does for her community, for Daily Coast, for the country. And I know how incredibly difficult this has to be. And she's fighting and persevering. And I have so much respect for her as a person. And I'm a little teary-eyed right now, so I'm sorry about that. But I do. It's just love and affection and gratitude.
Yeah. No, we love you, Erna. And people should hear your voice. As difficult as it is, I know this is... We all are experiencing something, Marcos, that we're just not even dealing with right now. You know, grief and trauma are real, and when it's suppressed and then it manifests later on in so many ways. I mean, we need, at some point, we're going to have to talk about some type of collective release or therapy or something. But be that as it may, what are you seeing from the air? You're looking at polls. There you know, we look at some of these characters that Erna has described, and we know they're up to funny business. There's a consensus that Trump may even be trying to benefit from some of this chaos, recreate the Nixon playbook of 68. And after all, you know, he's got nothing but Nixon acolytes around him, including one with a tattoo all over his back. But is that something that we need to be concerned about? Are the polls, or is your reading of what the polls say, suggesting that, you know, he really is losing serious ground?
So, I mean, part of it, it's funny, I didn't want to come on today because it's such an emotional moment. And sometimes it feels like talking about numbers and polling and data is sort of kind of septic in a moment that doesn't deserve that sort of cold, calculating look. So I was hesitant, but you talked me into coming on, and there's
and when you do it, Marcos, when you finish, I'll explain to you why it's not and why it's still sacred.
Okay.
So go ahead. I'll explain.
There has been clearly Trump is trying to turn this into his favor, law and order, and he thinks that this is a way to get back suburban white women, which are they were the one group that has flipped in major fashion since the 2016 election. That's the reason Nancy Pelosi is Speaker of the House. And so they think that showing images of Black people will scare these white women back into the Republican Party. That's clearly what he's trying to do. So one of the reasons I really love civics, and the reason I co-founded civics, is because we're able to pull things, track things daily, and do so before major events happen. So it's not like we rushed into the field to pull how people are feeling about the Black Lives Matter and the protests. We've been tracking on a daily basis attitudes towards Black Lives Matter every single day for 3 years. Mm-hmm. So it was sort of in the background. We've talked about it before. One of the things about public opinion that people don't realize is it doesn't change very often. So it's kind of boring, right? Nothing happens. People look at our Trump approval charts and they say, well, nothing's happening. Well, that's because people's opinions really don't change that often. So when they do, it's momentous. And we made public our Black Lives Matter chart because the response to this weekend's protests had been off the charts positive. For the first time ever, white Americans now approve of Black Lives Matter. You can see it. I mean, it's go to civicswithaq.com, the Black Lives Matter chart. Any fear that people may have that protests may turn people against the movement, or that white people may be scared off, or that Trump can benefit from it, the exact opposite, it's happening. In fact, there's an 18-point shift in favorability towards Black Lives Matter amongst Republicans.
Now, how big is the shift again? Say it again.
18-point shift, net shift. Now, keep in mind, only 11% of them approve. but only 49% disapprove. So we're talking half of Republicans don't disapprove of Black Lives Matter. Now, the biggest shift is now a bunch of them saying, like, well, whatever. I don't approve, I don't disapprove. But for a group of people that 3 years ago was about 80% disapproved of Black Lives Matter to now about half of them is a huge shift. And if the purpose of the protests is to move America in a direction of educating them about the challenges faced by the Black community, and the difficulty that community faces, and the problems with the police, if that was the goal, it has been a resounding success. And so once again, you have Trump, and we have Trump, not only his approval ratings dropping, but for the first time, we're seeing his approvals dropping with non-college whites. So those are his core base. He won about 75% of them in 2016, and he's still going to win them. But if he won them with 75 and now they're at 69%, 68%, that obviously impacts his ability, not just to win, but it also impacts Democrats' ability down ballot. And so this issue is not only having huge resonance in people's feelings and opinions about Black Lives Matter and that struggle, it's having a partisan impact. And so this movement and these weekend protests are literally changing America as in real time, right now. These protests, they're not scaring people away. They're not boosting Trump in any way. They are literally changing America for the better. And so I'm too young for 1968. I wasn't born in 1968. I mean, I was in the United States till 1980. So that's not my frame of reference. My frame of reference I don't know what my frame of reference was. I just didn't know what to expect. And so to see these numbers prove that the protest movement is so incredibly positive and so incredibly effective just makes me so much more proud of everything that these incredible leaders are accomplishing today.
So thank you, Marco. So to address what, and I appreciate your sensitivity in considering this septic, but let me just tell you why it's not. And Ern, I'd like your reaction to this as well. So I've been in conversations, obviously I'm always in conversations. I haven't missed a conversation on this with any number of people from all sides of the liberal left, revolutionary pan-Africanists. I was even on the phone with a member of the Communist Party this morning to the extent that still exists. And they called me, said, Mark, we need you, we got to do something. It's like, all right, let's talk. So having said that, the consensus, there's several consensuses. I'm gonna deal with the first one. And then there's a big second one, Marcos, we need your help with. So the first one is this, and this is why what you're talking about is not septic. Young people, you know, Hillary Clinton had a problem with African-American young people. Black and brown young people are historically challenging when it comes to turnout and voting. We've talked about that ad nauseum, Marcos. But that now in this, people fear that it's going to be even worse because the young people are so frustrated, so angry. They have given up on the system. They don't even believe that it's worth their time to vote, right? Nobody want to hear that mess right now. And so, you know, I was talking with folk and then I just started talking about the history, you know, and how if we would consider the way history repeats itself, for the record, you know, I was only two in 1968, but I'm gonna go back a little further. None of us was around during the Civil War. And you had Reconstruction where African-Americans, Erna, as you know, were elected by the thousands across the South. We had the first Congressional Black Caucus. Former slaves were senators. Rolling. Then the period of reclamation. Johnson pulls back the troops. What coincided with our loss of vote, Jim Crow laws, voter suppression? What coincided with all of that was lynchings. The two were not separate. And that resulted in the grief, frustration, intimidation, desperation, and that literally killed our political power and our right to vote. So my thesis is police violence does the same thing. It's having that effect. If young people are saying voting's not important, and if some of them weren't saying that 2 weeks ago and they're saying it now, then we see the same intimidation of violence taking place. Second of all, and I was in conversations with the Leadership Conference on Civil and Human Rights, one of our legacy groups. And what a lot of people don't know and haven't been educated about, because we always talk presidential politics, unfortunately, everybody does, and you don't think about the local. You know, you can elect officials on a local level that affect policing and can hold police accountable, be they mayors and city council members. And so what, you know, what's a lot is being lost in the discussion is, you know, voting can change that at your level. And again, I know that's not sexy and people are angry. Here come Mark and everybody else talking about voting. We're sick of voting. But I think that we have to emphasize that there's a relationship, there's a history. Not only did they kill George Floyd. See, this is not random to me anymore. So that's something. This ain't just something. We know police violence is cultural and it seems random. But to me, it's also systemic. There's no coincidence between the timing of the death of George Floyd and others we already know are going to happen, and intimidation and suppression of the vote. So that's why I'm saying educating folk on the importance of the franchise against the violence and the lynching. We look, talking about George Floyd now, before that we were talking about armed vigilantes, lynching Ahmaud Arbery, Breonna Taylor, all of that, David McAfee now in Florida. I see no delineation. But first to you, Erna, am I making any sense? You're a young person. Do you think that type of approach or argument will help? I mean, what do you think?
So, I mean, there's certainly none of us is new to voter suppression, right? There's been number of tactics to steal the vote, to intimidate people out of it. But when I think about just even Marcos saying the numbers of people whose opinions about police are shifting in real time right now, I think another reason that it feels difficult for people to get excited about the vote is because so often are we faced with visionary choices, right? People are often asked to go out and do something that is becoming increasingly difficult. Those difficulties are aimed and targeted at them specifically, and to cross all of these barriers for politicians who don't have vision, who start with limitations, who begin the conversation at what is currently possible instead of casting a vision for what could be possible, who for years and years and years have completely, you know, just really buried any conversation about holding police accountable, about abolishing what we know is a system that was started with the aim of controlling the movement of Black people through this country, right? We talked about that last week, about the slave patrols. And when we are looking at the fact that what it takes is this sort of mass pain, death in some ways that feels almost voyeuristic for people who are not in the communities, for that to be what it takes for them to even move a little bit, then it's really difficult, I think, to make people feel excited about voting when we're so often, I mean, the conversation was had in 2012, 2016, 2020 about this isn't what I want, but in 2016, people weren't excited to vote against Trump. They wanted to vote for someone. This year, people aren't excited to vote against Trump. They want to be able to see visionary leadership that can have these radical ideas about transforming what has been now for centuries, for decades, impacting their very material lot, the material conditions of their lives, which so often end up on the negotiating table, right? And so I think we do need to talk about the power of the vote. I think Minneapolis, my area, has done incredible things at the local level. So many of the elected leaders in this time are young people of color who come from our activist and artist circles. And so that's why we're seeing such powerful leadership on the ground here, because we elected people with vision and who encouraged us to dream and vision into a future which now seems a lot more possible.
That's a profound statement and very real. Marcos, but do you see why I'm feeling that what you have to share is still important in this conversation? Because if we don't...
Absolutely. Yeah, I was so excited to see that Ferguson, Missouri now has its first Black mayor, and it's a Black woman. And she was asked, how did it feel to be this historic person? And she said, it feels like I have a lot of work to do. I mean, it's like she already is giving me hope that things can get better with that sort of political engagement that didn't exist in Ferguson before. I can you can go into civics numbers, and you can look at Joe Biden's favorabilities with the young people and young people of color, and they're crap. I mean, it's just, there's just no way to sugarcoat. Now, of course, Trump is as well. But there's no way to sugarcoat exactly what Arna's saying, is that there's a lack of, and what you were saying, that there's this lack of faith in the system, and that it's almost a tuning out because it doesn't seem relevant to them in any way. And I don't have any confidence that Biden is going to be the person to turn that around. I think Biden is on track to win the election because Donald Trump has just made him such a mess of literally everything that he's bleeding all sorts of support everywhere. But that's not a recipe for a strong progressive future. We need young people engaged. We need that energy, those ideas, that sense that anything is possible, as opposed to the cynicism and the fossilized way of thinking that happens when we get too old and we get too beaten down, right? So we need that young youth and energy, and I'm not sure I know who is going to be the person to bring that in. I know it's a problem, it's a crisis, and I think events like what's happening now, you're right, doesn't really instill confidence that the country's on the right path.
Well, and so to segue into that, so Erna, you know, Marcos and I, you know, we talk a lot of politics, electoral politics. We've been vetting vice presidential candidates. I think now more than ever, Marcos, that becomes important, because someone, if there's a chance at this, even though what Erna said is compelling, and this is a mighty obstacle to overcome at this time, to engage young people and interest them in this, the question becomes, which we know is going to be a woman, but which one of these women can most inspire the young people and get that ticket's numbers out of that crap status, to use your term? Amy Klobuchar is finished. Obviously, you said that before, but it's confirmed now.
Yeah.
Despite, you know, whatever we think of her or respect we have of her or her repackaging, I think that that Kamala may even pose a problem now because of the history as a prosecutor. I don't think you can reorient that in time for November. And now, as popular as Val Demings is, she was a chief of police. And while there's nothing on her record that shows anything, you know, all it's going to take is something, some little small incident that happened while in Orlando that she may not have even known about. And then you got a cop right there and you're done. So I'm asking you from your position in the air, you know, who do you think? And Ern, I'll ask you the same question if it even matters to you. But I'll ask Marcos. I mean, we've talked, the last time we talked, you were high on Elizabeth and Stacey. But so I'm asking you again, though, in terms of the moment, everything has changed since last time we talked, obviously. So in this moment, who can do it? I feel like, and I've been talking to a lot of people, I feel like there's some people out there that we've not considered. And I can't name them because we just haven't thought about them. But and at this point, we're going to need someone that can galvanize young voters of color and do their best, as hard as it's going to be, to let them know, if nothing else, as Conrad World bequeathed us in his epitaph, we got to come together and at least get this joke out. And then we can struggle with Joe Biden if that's what we have to do. But what do you think, Marcos? What do you have any ideas or suggestion who that person is? Or do you think that either Elizabeth or Stacey could still actually do that?
So Warren and Abrams, the reason I am gung-ho on both of them, and I still am, is because they're the two that best unify the party, the sort of establishment wing and then the activist Bernie wing. And both of them, I think, do fairly well with the younger voters. But I don't, to me, they're party unity candidates. As far as somebody who can bring the youth vote, I don't have any, I can't imagine, unless you're willing to, maybe an Ayanna Pressley, but I think she'd be too it's too soon, right? I mean, I think we're building a bench. So, you know, I'm more hopeful about where things are going in the future. But right now, we're still dealing with the bench that we built 20 years ago, and it's a little bereft.
Aaron, what about, well, first of all, let me ask you to speak for yourself. You describe how a lot of young people are feeling. How do you feel? And just be honest with us. Do you give a damn about voting this November? Is that even on your radar right now with everything overwhelming that's going on as a young person?
I mean, some of the primary work that I do at Daily Coast is around voting rights and voter access. So yes, I give a damn. I do also give a damn about people having options. And, you know, when I look at the field of candidates from spring 2019 to where we are now, it's very disheartening that we had so many young people, so many folks of color, so many, even women of color, just all of this new progressive energy to just end up right back in the 90s, basically, to end up right back in the 90s. So I care, and I care about the extra attack that my communities have been under Trump. And so I can definitely look at my vote as mitigation and harm reduction. I do not care about Joe Biden as a candidate whatsoever. And he's so uninspiring, and it boggles the mind how in 2019, it was just a joke to think that we'd end up at Joe Biden, and here we are. In large part because of people's fear to think in radical ways. We thought safe and slow and easy is the best way to go against Trump, but nothing that the administration is doing is slow and easy. They are rapidly deteriorating our rights even further. We looked at the president on TV getting ready to call the military against his own citizens. And when we have the right wing willing to go that far, it's just not exciting. It's just not exciting to go back to the 90s Democratic Party. And so, I mean, I don't know if this fully answers your question. I care about voting, and I care about my participation in democracy, and I care about holding it together long enough so that it still exists in tangible ways. So that when we do have more political will for these more progressive candidates, that there's an infrastructure for more people to participate. But I cannot say I'm in any way energized by this 2020 election.
So let me be very specific then. Can you think of, and maybe you need time to think about it, but I'll put it out there. Is there a leader or personality that could mitigate Joe Biden's lack of inspiration, a person of color, obviously a woman of color, that could be an inspiration and take over that messaging and that ticket at this time? Have you thought about that? Is anyone who you think has a shot at that?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, me and my circle have long been following Stacey Abrams' career and have been excited and energized by her. I think, you know, I also think Abrams had some unforced errors in terms of throwing Tara Reid under the bus for Joe Biden without actually having the nomination in hand. But I don't know, this is a difficult one, Mark, because I think that there are women of color leaders who we are energized by, but I can say I won't speak for everyone, but my circle of Black women also doesn't enjoy the idea of a woman of color having to come in and clean up this white man's mess. And like, you know, and clean and offset his record, and also put them in a position to then carry that record for the rest of their careers. But that said, I personally am energized by Stacey Abrams, Ayanna Pressley. I haven't put a whole bunch more thought into it, to be perfectly honest, because I am going to vote the ticket.
Take a moment sort of to point out that Arna and her team were, I think we may have been one of the first people to endorse Stacey Abrams when she ran for governor.
Correct. Right.
Arna, I mean, we were like on the forefront. And then when I say we as Daily Coast, I actually mean Arna and her crew, because they were on top of that thing from day one. So when Arna talks about Stacey Abrams, she knows what she's talking about.
Yeah. No, I agree. And I think, you know, in terms of someone who's already present, again, I have the feeling there are probably some people we haven't thought about. And we probably should start doing that. But in terms of who's in the mix right now, and see, before all this happened, Marcos, I was extolling your numbers on Georgia and the closeness and her maybe being able to help out there, because that brings you something else tangible. I think in terms of what's there right now, Erna, you know, unforced errors notwithstanding, and there are some, several. I think that she's close enough in age to the generation that needs to be informed that it's still worthwhile to vote. I mean, I think that's where we are. So, but this.
I honestly don't understand why she hasn't been in that short list for a while. And maybe Erna has an idea of why she's been sort of excluded from that. I mean, because it's been Warren, Harris, Klobuchar, has been the sort of the shortlist, and I can't for the life of me understand why Abrams is not in that group.
I have a hypothesis, but I'll let Erna answer first if she has an idea.
I mean, my pithy answer is sometimes it seems like we like losing, but I don't know. It really and truly boggles the mind, especially given the way that she's been positioned in this 2020 cycle. There was so many calls for her to actually run for president, to be the top of the ticket. She has energized the base, particularly around the work that she's doing around voter access, voter suppression, civic engagement. That's just been really exciting. She's got a very strong platform on criminal justice and carceral reform, which is, you know, would be energizing to the base. I have literally no idea why in this moment she wouldn't be considered.
Well, but let me just share before we go what, you know, some of the things, the discussions I've been involved in have revealed. To go back to what you said, what I was saying, Marcos, about how I was extolling your numbers. I said, y'all, I had Marcos on, and these numbers look good for Stacey. And then the responses I got floored me. And so how do I say this tactfully without revealing too much? You know, there's always personality in politics. The mayor of Atlanta, who is very sharp, herself, is one of Joe Biden's top surrogates. And there is some tension between the mayor of Atlanta and Stacey. Yeah, look, you see Marco's expression. Now, I mean, that's what we're dealing with, as always. And see, we in this big tent, and we don't always get along. You know what I'm saying? We got our personality, and so there's some stuff there. But then, that's also, Erna, and I won't go into detail right now, because of some other unforced errors. So that Stacey has a record in the legislature in Atlanta that some felt was not as revolutionary as, let's say, you or I might have been, Erna. You know, that's fine. We make those compromises. So there's that tension right there. And I'm going to say this. I want to put it out there because I think there needs to be a larger discussion, Erna, about this. But just like Marcos, we talked about this ad nauseum, internalized sexism and oppression toward one another. White women, Hillary ain't right. She ain't the right one. It's just something about her. You know, somebody even did a study once about if most people who said there's something about her, when you study it, most of them still don't know what it is. It's just something, and they've been manufactured hostility. Hillary's just not the right one. And so women through internalized sexism, as you know, Erna, can sometimes be hard on each other, just like black folks are hard on each other. So there's a sentiment amongst black women that I have spoken to, and I'm talking about across the spectrum, black women who have Eurocentric appearances to black women who have the same appearance you and I have, Erna, dreadlocks. And I talked to them separately. Mark, America is not gonna elect, I'm gonna be honest with you, what people say to me. I don't believe it. I refuse to believe, but I'm putting it out there because we need to either check ourselves or figure this out. Marcos and Erna, what they say to me, America is not going to elect an overweight African-American woman with dreadlocks. And I was devastated when I heard that, you know, because Erna, in our lives, we accept each other and ourselves. We figure everybody else in 2020 is cool with us too. Ain't nobody tripping on me and you having dreadlocks, Erna. You know, but then when people say America, when it's time to go vote. So, you know, that is a little bit discouraging. And just one other point I want to make, Erna, when you talk about going back to the 90s, that's the irony of Joe Biden. Joe Biden is supported because he was Barack Obama's vice president. So if my man is uninspiring, which he is, you know, I like Joe, but, you know, bless his heart. You know, I wish the three of us could just, you know, do a retreat with him one weekend. Maybe, I don't know. But anyway, talk to him and say, dude, you know, if he's uninspiring, where he come from? He came from the first black president. And so that goes back to your point about the bench, Marcos. You know, Joe Biden was put on the bench. And then this is kind of what we're left with. So it's a tricky situation between, it's like schizophrenia. Well, this is the first black president's man. But yet, something's missing. And then, you know, to kind of bring this full circle, you know, we're talking about Jackie Robinson earlier in the context of Conrad World. People forget, you know, Barack Obama was our era's Jackie Robinson in terms of that office. And when you're the Jackie Robinson, you got to turn the other cheek. Sometimes when you're the first, unfortunately. But people forget, after about 2 years, Branch Rickey said to Jackie Robinson, y'all can read about it. This story ain't told. It's like a lot of Dr. King speeches we don't hear. We hear one. Branch Rickey said, hey, man, you free. He said, what you mean? Don't turn the other cheek no more. You've paid your dues. Light these folk up. And Jackie became a pariah in Major League Baseball and everywhere because he started fighting on the baseball field for our rights, standing up to umpires, making bad calls against him because he was black. He was not beloved by the time he left baseball. So at some point, you got to transition from the turn the other cheek to say, all right, it's time to get down. And I think the Obama feeling, era, spirit is struggling with that because I think people are turning that corner, but then we're still stuck with Joe. But, you know, I didn't mean to give a whole speech like that. You know, Joe keeps us in the dugout kind of turning the other cheek, unfortunately, is the analogy I'm trying to draw. But anyway, I said a lot. I probably talked too long. Either of you have any closing thoughts. And folks, we're not trying to discourage. We're just having a conversation. If anything, it's a wake-up call. We got to get it together.
The encouraging part is that we are building that bench. I mean, you have the squad and you have more and more Democrats like that we're electing. And we need more primary challenges. We need to continue cleaning house and modernizing our party and building that bench. And I'm going to be, I know there's going to be a rush for this bandwagon, but I want to be right there in the front of the Ayanna Pressley for president. I mean, I think she's old enough. So in fact, one of my reasons I'd love to see Warren BVP is because then Ayanna can then get elected to the Senate and boom. And then we have her jumping off point into the presidential, because that's where she belongs. She belongs in the White House.
Yeah.
So we are building that bench. And I know everybody likes to focus on the presidential, and it's the most momentous office. And of course, it's easy to get really discouraged that we're stuck with Biden versus Trump. I mean, I hope they don't debate. I really hope they don't debate, because I have no interest in seeing two old white men yelling at each other with making stuff up and who knows what else. But the future is better, and we're building the future. And as long as people focus on electing these better, more visionary people, the way Erna put it, you know, she talked about her city council. I know the Seattle City Council's got some amazing people. You have some great people being elected to city council, which is a stepping point to mayor, which is a stepping point to the state legislature, which is a stepping point to Congress and the Senate and eventually the White House. That's where we build this more progressive power. And I actually see a lot of energy there. I mean, we've been talking about that for over 10 years, Mark, but I finally actually see people paying the proper attention to those offices, and they matter at the local level, like the mayor of Ferguson. It matters. So I look at that bench and I look at our future, and the future is bright. We just have to get through this moment in time, which is just crap. And So I'm demoralized for the immediate future. I'm energized for the future.
Erna, closing thoughts?
I mean, I think right, this thing that happens really often is when we are a part of something and then we want to hold that something accountable. Folks say that we're discouraging people. And so if you are, you know, if you're on the left and you want to hold the Democratic Party accountable for such uninspiring choices and leaving us with those, is that you want to discourage people. And I don't want to discourage people from voting. What I'm saying is I understand. I understand why it doesn't feel super encouraging right now. But I think we can't sit on the sidelines. I think because this is an opportunity for us. If we look at activists and revolutionaries and folks who are moving things on the ground through their communities, I think we have a chance always to look at this as an opportunity, not of saving our vote until we find the candidate who is the most inspiring, best fit for us, but also looking at no matter who's in office, we're gonna have to push them, right? No matter who's sitting in the White House, no matter who's sitting in Congress, we are gonna have to push them leftward in order for them to start advancing policies that are really getting to the radical transformative changes that we want. And who would you rather be pushing?
Yeah, yeah. Erna Landrum, the director of campaigns at Daily Kos. Marcos, the founder of Daily Kos. This is Thursday Kos double dose. Erna, we appreciate you. You continue to stay safe. You are in our prayers. We are with you more than you know. Just reach out in terms of whatever you need. And we so appreciate you. I think it's very poignant what you shared and people hearing from someone. Because, you know, there's a whole lot of folk on TV, too. That's another thing. Who have become experts and talking heads on this, and they're not right there where you are. So we're grateful to you being there and giving us your perspective, okay?
Thank you.
All right. Marcos, my brother, thank you, man. We will continue to fight. This is, we got a ways to go. We're going to do something, y'all, and just, you know, hopefully the best will come out of it. Marcos, thank you. You and the kids, everybody safe in your world?
We're safe. And so, yeah, all to you, all your listeners, stay safe, keep fighting.
All right, folks. Thank you, everybody.
Thanks.
God, you are our refuge. Send our ancestors to guard our doors. Cast out this virus from our communities and our bodies. Heal, bless, and protect everyone listening and their loved ones. Thank you for listening to Make It Plain and Get Woke. Remember to listen, like, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts. If all minds are clear, it has been made plain.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.